pace and winning the race. 91.7 Real Radio. Oza Radio. Oza Radio.
Excellent. It's exactly 19:11. Welcome to Zambia's biggest radio show, Unseen Minority. On today's episode, we are joined by we have the honor of hosting a woman whose name is synonymous with courage, wisdom, and relentless pursuit for justice. She has not only paved the way for women in leadership, but has also redefined what true leadership looks like, men and women alike. Her journey is one of resilience, integrity, and unshakable commitment to national development. As a former vice president of the Law Association of Zambia, she has spent over 20 years fighting for justice, championing the rights of the marginalized, and proving that leadership is not about power, it's about service. Welcome, ma'am.
So much. Thank you so much for having me here, and thank you for the kind introduction.
Indeed, you are a powerful woman. We have had a privilege to watch your videos on YouTube. We also watched the podcast you did with Linda. We were truly inspired, and we said we must have her for our first episode in 2025.
Thank you.
I'm joined in studio with our CEO, Mr. Christopher Jambila. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, sir. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Welcome, madam.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure having you.
The pleasure is all mine.
So, as my colleague earlier alluded, we have been greatly inspired by your journey and the track record you've set, just both within the law fraternity and outside. So, we just want to know what inspired you to be the person that you are today.
What makes my heart sing? What inspired me to begin my leadership journey is just the desire to influence change and just do my part in national development. Whatever small part you can do, I think do it and do it with passion. So for me, that's always been the driving force behind everything that I have done.
That's very powerful. Yeah, I think I've also been listening to a lot of motivational videos and TED Talks where people just talk about putting in your 1%. Like, of course, we can't change the world overnight, but we can put in our 1%, each of us, and eventually
it adds up to something.
It adds up to something, yes.
That's so true.
That's very powerful, especially in a country like Zambia, where we don't have so much, I would say, political will. Political will, and particularly on today's topic where it talks about patriotism and, you know, its role in national development. You know, most people think patriotism is loyalty to the government, or some people think it's criticizing the government.
Two different views, eh?
yes. So with just like how rich your journey is, how have you found that balance when putting in your 1%?
You know, everything that we do must be colored by one thing. When you talk about patriotism, it's really about love and affection for your country.
True.
That's all it is. And it's timely that we're having this discussion today. I know people are celebrating the Day of Love. So we'll talk about love for your country. And that's what should color everything that you do. Every action that you take, every decision that you make, every interaction you have should be tainted with how does this improve my country? And I can't change the whole country as one person. You can't be everywhere. But what can you do in your corner of the country? And what can you do to contribute to the bigger picture? Zambia is home for many of us. So patriotism is about Mother Zambia. What can I do to improve Mother Zambia now and to improve Mother Zambia for the future? Because we won't, 50, 60 years from now, all of us here won't be here. So what legacy are we leaving behind? What sort of a country are we leaving behind? And that's what we should be looking at when we do things, when we say things. Patriotism is really love for Zambia now and love for Zambia in the future.
True. There's a narrative of, especially among the youths, where they think leadership is often associated with authority rather than service. How would you advise the youths in terms of like shifting their mindset?
You know, when you're talking about shifting mindsets, it's also important to understand where the mindset started from.
Mm.
If you look back on your, say, school days,
mm.
when you have your prefects, for example,
oh, yeah.
those are your authority figures. And authority figures, those are your leaders and authority figures. And all they do is tell you what to do when.
Mm.
So it's like we grow up thinking, that's all that leadership is. I need, there's someone who has special powers, they get special rights and privileges. If you ever went to a boarding school,
mm.
you'd know what special rights and privileges, mm. you know, your prefects would get.
Yes, yes.
So true. When you aspire to those positions, you're just thinking, I need to be able to tell people what to do. And I need to get these special rights and privileges. So you sort of have to understand why young people think that's what leadership is. But when you come out and you're in society, as it were, it's difficult to have an authoritarian sort of leadership where you're just barking orders down. You have to get buy-in and don't think about yourself.
Mm.
How is my position going to change the good of all the people around me? So my advice to young people, you know, is always shift from the school of thought that it's, you know, authority, just back orders, people do what I want. How are you going to navigate crisis? In having authority can't help you navigate crisis. So when you serve others, it's easier to get buy-in. When you are focused on the common good,
mm-hmm.
it's much easier to achieve a vision. So for me, I always blame, sorry to say, some of the ways in which we grow up for some of the mindsets that we have. And when we understand where we come from, it's easier to sort of shift them. And no, it can work for a time, but your entire leadership journey, especially if you're focused on the national level, it's really about serving and serving people. And you still get some of the privileges, well-earned privileges, for that effort that you put in. But the motivation should be, what's the common goal? If I serve others, I will definitely also be serving myself.
Speaking of growing up, I just wanted to, like, I have this question of, like, where did it start from? Like, you stepping into leadership and the likes, especially for your type of leadership style, right, where you think it's not about authority, it's about service. At what point did you actually realize that?
Yes, did you have a particular epiphany where you can point it out? So, okay, this is the moment I had interest.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, personally, for me, I remember when I was in fifth grade, I read a story where an MP used the constituency funds to buy an ambulance. But what he did was actually buy a minibus, remove the seats, and put a mattress behind.
Oh my God.
I think that's a moment I can trace to where I said, okay, I think we need more patriotism in this country.
In this country.
Yeah, so did you ever have, like, that aha moment for you?
You know, I can't point to one particular incident.
Mm.
But I think from a very early age, I always wanted to do my part.
Yeah.
You know, even in the home setup, even in the community, wherever I was, I wanted to do my part. And I think every step that I have taken, I've always asked myself, what is my part?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say the people who change the world are those who believe, who are crazy enough to believe that they can change the world. But sometimes I think for me, my particular leadership style, I might think, okay, that might be too big and I might get intimidated.
Mm-hmm.
But what can I do to do my little part in the corner? So I can't point to any specific incident, but I can say I've always wanted to do my part and ensure that there's always someone else also doing their part, because all those little bits add up to something, like we were saying earlier.
Oh, that's very powerful. I don't know if you remember the first time we met on the Dam on TV debate.
Yeah.
On the panel, there's one thing that was mentioned. I think it was that a system should not depend on people. People should depend on a system. I say this because listening to you, I can clearly see that the passion is coming from just your own motivation. It's self. I think one of the quotes from you is you have to be free of yourself for you to free others.
Yeah.
Yes, but do you think it's a systemic problem to some extent where we feel like we need to start with changing the system first before we start changing the minds?
That's true. Yeah, I think so. But I think the key is a bit of self-awareness, you know, knowing what your strengths are, where the weaknesses are, and playing to your strengths. It's like sport. You know, those of you who watch soccer and play soccer, you have to choose a particular role that you will play. You know, I know there are all-rounders, people who can, you know, be strikers, goalkeepers, defenders, but most people who play any team sport know that they need to do their part of that team sport. And then the whole team wins. Yeah, so when you think about leadership, I think in a way, I think self-awareness is key, knowing your strengths and knowing exactly where you fit into the grand scheme of things.
Oh yeah, that's very interesting, because also my colleague and myself, we had the privilege of like having a conversation with a Swedish ambassador. Yes, and when he was just educating us about their system, they actually have a separate legislature and executive, where a minister cannot, a parliamentarian cannot go in, can't be a minister and the likes, where the parliamentarians are just responsible for budgeting. But here we're in a situation where a parliamentarian who is a minister can walk into a government parastato and dictate what happens there. So do you think these are things that can help? As you say, we might have some all-round players, but do we need safeguards to say, yeah, striker, just keep
stay
on striking?
In that, yes, I think, yes, that system would really help. Part of our problems, especially in Africa, is that most of our state organs overreach, and there's no real separation of powers. It exists on paper, you know, we like to talk about a separation of powers, but when you go into how governments and systems operate, you find that they overreach each other and not really operate as checks and balances. So yes, there is room for systems to enhance a proper separation of powers, and I think that will help the citizenry a lot, actually, because part of our problems with interaction with government is just the overreaching parts of the organs of the state.
I know. Now that's very interesting. But like every time we bring up these conversations, it's such a huge task. I think these things have been working like this for so long, especially that we took them over from after gaining independence.
Yes.
And prudence would entail that would have been the time for us to shift. But I think because it benefited certain people, we continued with the system we wanted to liberate ourselves from. But like 60 years down the line, where do we start from?
Yeah, I think it's such a wide question. But for me, I've always thought about it in terms of separation, really, especially for the judiciary. Who guards the guard? Those are the gatekeepers. So you want to safeguard that particular institution, because then you know that if the other two overreach, we've got somewhere to run. So yes, 60 years down the line, things could be a little better, but I think it's not too late to make improvements to the way our systems work, and also challenge our leaders who are in the various organs to just focus on their roles. If you are legislators, be legislators. The executive, you know what the duties of the executive. We know that power is really centralized around the executive, but there are ways in which we can operationalize and make sure that there's no overreach. The judiciary, let's keep it independent, because those are our guards.
But looking at how we're in a like climate where, as you rightly mentioned, we should be able to challenge the system, but where that is seen as being unpatriotic, when you challenge the powers that be, the status quo, people get threatened. So in that light, is there any particular mindset that we have as Zambians that you really think that we need to move away from?
You know, I've always been bothered by one particular phrase that's common amongst Zambians, and it's the Boma Yanganepo.
People always use that phrase.
You know, I know that government has a duty to its citizens, a responsibility to its people. But I always think that we as people also don't think about what our role in building the country is.
True.
You know, you want government reach and government intervention in almost every little thing, even the smallest of things which we can achieve at community level. So for me, that mindset, if I could shake it out of Zambia, that would be it. If I could shake it out of the Zambian people, that would be it. Like, yes, you know, you can hold your government accountable and say, these are your duties, this is what you're supposed to provide. But for us, even in the communities, what can we do for ourselves? I was looking the other day at our drainages. You know, they were digging new drainages and you expect the rainwater to flow. And as you are passing through the streets of Lusaka, you have people who are tossing their garbage in there. And then this water doesn't flow. And then your next thing is, Boma Yanganepo. So just what's your contribution to this? You know, even as citizens, how accountable are we ourselves with the resources that we have and entrusted to us? These brand new drainages, we go back to the same cycle. You know, we throw litter in there and then we come and say the Boma should look at, you know, those things that we can actually control. So for me, it's a huge mindset that I would really like to walk up to people and just sort of shake it off. Shake it a little bit out of them and show them that you actually have the power to change what's around you.
True.
If all of us take this small step to change what's around us, it adds up to so much, even as a nation.
The other time I was having a conversation with a colleague of mine who was asking me, like, how did you come up with the Unseen Minority and the like? So we said, for Unseen Minority was somewhat very different because we're not only advocating, we are activating the change. So we're following these members of parliament and telling them, look, for the youths who are ready to work, what strategies do you have? What do you have for the youths on the table? And that's how we exist as Unseen Minority. I want to throw it back to Lars. Because I know you've served in various positions. You're a council member twice, right?
Yes.
And HT?
Yes. I was the money woman.
How has it been HT? How has it been HT at a time when you were building the last house there, yes, right? How is it? I know there's a lot of handling of funds. How was it for you?
It was the most challenging period, but also a period when I think I grew the most, because it was the first time that the association was actually embarking on a project like that. It had been mooted through the years. Various councils had discussed it and had improved upon it, but those were the 2 years when we properly implemented it. We had collected money from our members, the contracts had been signed, and now we're going into the active phase of construction. I can tell you now that I think I'm almost ready to be a building consultant. Because you're dealing hands-on with the people who are actually building, your project consultants. So for me, it was a huge period of growth. I enjoyed the challenge, and I'm proud of the members of the Law Association of Zambia for contributing their resources. And now we have a beautiful building that we can all be proud of. But for me personally, as sort of your project lead for the association at the time, it was a period of immense growth. I think I learned so much. Now numbers which I used to fear a long time ago, like, they're at my fingertips now. I can talk about them in my sleep.
I think you're the first lawyer who can do mine.
No, there are plenty. I know we fear numbers a lot, but yeah, I think now it's interesting. At least you see how projects are developing, because that place, someone was asking me the other day, where's the old Lars house? I said, it's demolished. And they said, no, we thought it was just behind.
Oh, it was there.
It was there.
It was right there.
Yes, but it was ground zero now. We demolished and started again.
Now I'm more impressed.
Wait, tell me, the old Lars house was right where the new...
Yes, it was standing right there. I have a picture somewhere.
I was looking for
it. No, it was standing right there.
I was there, my younger driver. Last, just where
I. Yeah, I think we moved. I think no. We ended up paying a bill of almost 200 because we're just going around
looking for the old house. Demolished, and that's where the new Lars house is standing.
No, that ride was worth paying for that building.
For that building, you're happy.
It was worth it. And so obviously, after HT, then you moved on to more responsibility now. Vice President. So I think my next question now is, I'll take you back to how you talked about how we need more independence to the judiciary and just the separation of power. So being the former vice president, obviously that's a high-level position. Yeah. Do you think there is more that the law fraternity could do in helping the government when it comes to separation of power and just checking the ambits of government reach?
Certainly. I mean, the Law Association of Zambia has a statutory mandate in Section 4. And we take the mandate, the association takes the mandate very, very seriously. I think you are aware previously the association has gone so far as to go to court to ensure that the rights of citizens are protected, to ensure that the constitution is interpreted correctly. So I think the association is very, very active in that space and has taken the statutory mandate very, very seriously. Even the current council, even when I served on council, it's something that was a clear focus, because that's what the law enjoins us to do. We can't keep silent when there's something going on that's wrong. So we'll use the tools that we have as lawyers. We can speak to the powers that be, engage and so on. But when that doesn't yield fruits, I think the association has never been shy to make sure that the rights and duties of citizens are protected and enhanced. There are, I think, so many cases where the Law Association of Zambia has litigated on those points.
Do you think it would be a direction worth considering where the Law Association of Zambia is conferred more power by Parliament?
I think the Act is quite sufficient. It's wide. I think there are 10, 11 objectives, and almost everything fits in there, both internal facing, for advancing the rights of members of the association, and external facing for the society. So I think it's wide enough for the association to maneuver, and the association has done very well in terms of ensuring that internally members are protected, and externally we're looking out for social good, for citizens, and just defending the constitution.
Because I say this because in one of these panel discussions that we've attended, we've had most people accuse bodies that serve somewhat the same purpose, like the Human Rights Commission. They have time and again been accused of being toothless, where they have the mandate, but they don't have the bite. They can see the injustice, but all they can do is end on talking.
Yeah, but you know, and maybe that's where personal leadership comes in. You might have, like you're saying, the mandate, but you need to have a leadership that also has a vision to execute that mandate. So it's a bit of introspection also on the leaders that we have. When you're in that position, be aware of what is expected of you, and just drive it as well within the mandate that you've been given.
So, and if I just like look at the problems that we have as a nation, I don't think we have different mandates. I think we all want to see the same thing. We want to see a better Zambia. But we live now in a country where we're not fighting poverty. We're fighting the person that is supposed allegedly to fight poverty. So, yeah, so it's an interesting quote that I heard from you. We are fighting
the same war.
But somehow we end up fighting ourselves. So where do you think the country is lacking in terms of fighting the problem as opposed to fighting each other?
You know, why I like to talk about fighting the war. Like you mentioned earlier, everyone has... The war on poverty is for everyone. The war against discrimination. There are so many long-term objectives that we all have. So even though we might not agree in terms of political views, other views, but every one of us knows what poverty looks like. No matter where you come from, you know what poverty looks like. You know what the lack of education looks like. You know what discrimination looks like. You know when someone has been stripped of their human rights and dignity. We all know what that looks like. So rather than focus on how Mr. Mbewe presents his solution, know that he's also focused on the same problem. And maybe pick on something that you know, he's presenting as a possible solution, and you can build on that. Because we have a common enemy, and it's not each other.
That's a powerful statement.
It's not each other, because I think sometimes, especially in politics, we tend to focus on the people. You know, I and then the problem. And I think that's where we lose it. If we are focused on the problem, we realize that we're both offering alternative solutions to the same problem, and that I can pick on part of your solution, merge it with mine, and we win the war, rather than focus on battles. You know, battles are a short term. I might not like how you said something, I go away upset with you. But when I think about, okay, actually what he was proposing actually makes sense.
That makes sense.
If I look past the person that was saying it.
In the condescension.
Yes. So I think we need to realize that we are all focused on what's good for Zambia, what's good for our various institutions, etc., etc. I think there are very few people who mean bad, who mean evil for wherever they are. So when you look past the person and focus on ideas and solutions, then you realize that we all have a common enemy. We're all fighting the same war.
And it's not us. So that's very powerful. I always joke with Mr. Mbewe and I say idle complaints should be treason. Because there's no way of just identifying a problem. And when it comes to coming up with solutions, you take a back seat.
You walk away.
You walk away from the
table. At least if you're sitting in the room, I'll forgive you.
No, but there are people who are so eloquent on mentioning what's wrong.
Yeah.
And the moment you just ask them, what do you think we should do? They go back to, no, that same person is the one who brought... Yeah, so when I look at that, it's also part of what we're trying to do as an organization. We are trying to like bring youth on the solution-oriented advocacy when it comes to contributing to your country. You just don't identify a problem. You have to be solution-oriented. So it's just not advocacy, education. It's also activating change. So it's after we talk about it. What next? What actionable plans can we implement in our own capacity to just do better for our country?
And allow me to say, I'm so proud of the initiative and the work that you're doing. I think the youth are a powerful force. Only sometimes they don't realize it, or maybe we're not organized. As I'm trying to calculate if I'm still a youth, so I was trying to decide whether to say you or we.
Welcome on board.
No, but I'm very proud of the work that you're doing. I think it's excellent, and it's very, very timely. We really need to inspire change, and I like the fact that you're focused on solutions, because everyone can identify a problem very easy. But solutions, like you said, slip through the back door and fade into the sunlight. Very few people want to stay in the room when we're talking about possible solutions. So well done to Nancy Minority.
I know, thank you very much. And you know, it's a very high compliment coming from you. So I don't think I'll clean my ears for the next 1 month. Just to re-echo.
Yeah, we have been having this conversation about youths making up like 70% of Zambia's population. But we most times find ourselves being used as political cadets, right? For a few politicians' big belly mandates. Mm. Right, so many times you find cadres are the youths, but then when times come for elections and the likes, we're still the people that are putting in the effort in terms of voting and the likes. Well, how would you advise the youths to navigate just themselves in terms of like loving the country? How would you just like,
you know, the starting point? I know that very few youths like to do this, but familiarize yourself with our national values, like what we stand for as a country.
As a country,
yeah. Because then, where do you fit in? So our national values are in our constitution. So it is important for the youth to look at what our national values are, and patriotism and national unity are part of our values. Look at democracy, human dignity, all those are part of our national values. So when you are being pulled into political activity, you need to reflect on how that fits into the national values. Because, like I said earlier, Zambia is our home. And we need to know that we are going to live, L-I-V-E, now, current, in a country that we'll be proud of, and we'll leave, L-E-A-V-E, we'll leave the country better. So we need to do both. Live in a better country and leave a better country. So I think the youth need to understand that, you know, you can be used now, but then the people who are asking you to do certain things won't be here in a couple of years.
Yeah,
what would be your what would be your story, you know? What will you tell the generations coming behind you about the country that you've left them, which you played a part in destroying? So I think just use your power wisely, as you 70% is a big number. You can imagine the things that you, the young people of this country, can achieve.
That's true. So leading up to my next question, I think this is a two-parter. Just let you digest it. So building on from what you've said in terms of, or what my colleague has said about youth being used, for me, the challenge that I find is in terms of gatekeeping in decision-making, it's about the doors which the people in power leave open. I'll say this, for example, a ministry can be developing a policy that is for youths, but or even students, a curriculum for students. But in that engineering room, you won't find a single student. But they're making decisions that would be, so, okay, so in this degree, this mode of learning, but there isn't. So youths are more like a checklist. After they come up with policies, then they come to say, now we're having a public discussion, youths attended, they have approved, they check the box, as opposed to having them in designing rooms. But when it comes to like the political facades, they widely open the door and allow you to enter. So the second part now is coming from a space that has for a long time been seen as, for lack of a better term, a boys' club. How has it been for you breaking that glass ceiling and just reaching the heights that you have in such a male-dominated space where there's so much gatekeeping? Because even from my own experience, just they are just at Lars House, you'd find men that would just like have, you'd even wonder what they're doing in that field, but they just have that narrative to say, no, I can't be led by a woman. But breaking those glass ceilings, and how would you advise us, the youth, to break those barriers now, to be in those engineering rooms where the real discussions for policies, national decision making is happening, as opposed to just being a checklist where they'll just have a public lecture about a policy they've already implemented and they just check a box and say, we consulted with the youth, they're with us.
They're with us, true. I wouldn't say, when you talk about the glass ceiling, I wouldn't describe it as broken just yet.
It's cracked.
It's cracked. And cracked is good progress. Cracked is good progress. We're yet to break it. I mean, when I reflect on the Law Association of Zambia, especially, maybe just to bring it home, it's 50 years of the Law Association of Zambia's existence with only one female president. So that's why
that's
I'm saying...
That's a golden goose.
that's why I say it's cracked. You know, in terms of experience, I think one of the things that I sort of picked up, again going back, I think we had an earlier discussion on mindsets, and relating it to the boys' club, you need to also understand where particular mindsets come from. I always find that useful in terms of trying to shift the mindset, right? So why we have this sort of male-dominated field and boys' club is just growing up, again, going back to the way we grew up. What toys did you get, if I may ask you, when you were growing up?
People are getting toys.
Okay, those who got toys, probably for the boys, would get a car, a truck, you know. The girls would get dolls and a kitchen set. So almost those traditional gender roles, almost saying, you know, the boys, you can have this, you can dream big, but the girls, your place is in the home, you know. So because those are the things that society is schooling us, sort of. So when you think back to see why it becomes a boys club, because some men, unfortunately, are not used to seeing women in corridors of power. You know, they're just not used to it. And we can't blame them because they've been socialized a certain way, right? But also, it's incumbent, and I'll bring it home to the youth. So let me just talk about women. It's also incumbent to not want to be in the room simply because, you know. So what are you bringing? What special skills are you bringing? What leadership style are you bringing? Because we want to be judged not on the basis of our gender, but on our abilities. So let's bring in some ability as well. So the young people, in those rooms where you have been consulted, what input have you given? Or are you there to sign that sheet of paper at the end of the
meeting? Yes. Something that has already been implemented.
No. Like, I think there are some places where even at very formative stages, there's engagement. But you find that the engagement isn't very productive, such that the next time there's something to do, they're like, oh, these are just coming to say yes.
But I beg to differ on that. I feel like, you know, the youths that are pulled... Because then, I mean, there are youths that are just like cadres, right?
Yes.
Known cadres.
And
these are people that are pulled into consultations. And then you want to complain we didn't get the input, the output we expected.
So it's also about the quality of the people they are bringing into the room.
Yes.
Like, agreed. That's true. So what can we do to get that quality into the room? Maybe that's the question we need to ask ourselves. So that then there's more engagement with that quality of youth.
I think we should stop spending money on youths. By spending money on youths, I mean, is it right if I say wrongfully, right? Because there's so much that we can do for the youths rather than giving them that 20 kwacha.
Yeah.
Right? There's so much training that we can give the youths other than giving them the 10 kwacha for screaming my name at the courts when I have a hearing. You get the point. So I feel like the people that are in the offices should stop gatekeeping for the right youths.
Right.
We have a lot of wrong people in offices, right? The same way we have a lot of wrong youths. But we have the right youths that are able to come
to contribute effectively. Yes. That's true. So we take it as a challenge to our leaders. They need to look up then the right caliber of people to give that input.
I have someone who mentioned to me one time and they just said, the right youth don't just know to play politics. Do you think it's especially from someone whose leadership style is based on competence, what you're able to offer, do you think there's a certain threshold that we need as people who are capable to just sell ourselves a bit, play some politics, get into those rooms? And do you think it's something worth considering that you need to chant a few names before you go and have that input in that African Union meeting?
I'll tell you what my honest view is. We have a challenge with the supply of young people and even women. I'll tell you why. You know, it's one thing to say you want more youths in the room. It's one thing to say you want women in decision-making positions. But where are they? You know what I mean? I'll put it down to maybe like elections. If your name is not on the ballot box, on the ballot paper, how am I going to vote for you? Right? So there's the supply side as well. You have very strong young people who are able to contribute, but they shy away from some of these roles. I'll never be able to explain why. Don't ask me. But they do shy away. And it's the same thing for women. You know, you can't want to stay in your little cocoon and say women are not in decision-making positions or youth are not in decision-making positions. Where are you? So supply of these people, you know, then we have demand. Because now I have an option, I have George, I have, you know, all these long list of capable young people, I can make my selection from them. Right? The challenge is the people who offer themselves for these roles and activities are, like you're saying, maybe not up to that caliber. So we need to offer ourselves more, make ourselves more available for this. Politics is not for someone else, or civic life is not for someone else. It's about all of us. Yeah. So if we're not putting ourselves and offering ourselves to do the work, and it's the hard work, pull us out.
It was also a challenge. You agree with me when we were contesting for elections. So he was contesting for vice president of UNZASU. I was also contesting for UNZALO president. So it was quite difficult for him, especially speaking for him, because he was unable to chant like "Vamonkuna vamoma." So we someone didn't have like the cadres that could scream that for us. So we just had to like talk to the right people on campus and tell them, look, we want to change the narrative. We want to run away from just screaming chants. We want to bring this on the table. Same for me at the School of Law. But for the School of Law, it's quite different.
It's different,
because people don't... expect somebody who's going to do the chanting. Yeah. You get the point. So it was quite different for him. But for him, it was very difficult for us to be on the ground, and none of us could chant. Hey, I'm uncle.
and you see, that's the challenge. So you find that people stay away because they think I can't engage in that way.
Mm.
Yeah, but I think you have to develop sort of other strategies. Like you've said, you decided to do a little bit more of an maybe in-person engagement and try to convince people one-on-one. And that's still okay. It's a good political strategy.
Mm.
And it works because the chanting is fun. But when people go to their rooms now after the chanting, I think they do pause to reflect and say, okay, I've chanted, but what was this guy really saying?
They chant after the election.
That's very true. I think isn't one of the things that I can attribute to my success was that after the debate night, I had a lot of people just walking up to me and just saying, okay, we heard that. Or I didn't attend, but I heard that. Yeah, so that was very powerful. So we are almost coming close to the end of the show. So I'll just if you don't mind, to take it just a bit personal. So speaking on, we've been talking about supply and offering ourselves to leadership and whatnot. Is there anything more we should expect in the near future for Nkosi's Machela?
Are we seeing you that ballot box? Because no, for me, you bring this new type of leadership that I would want to see on the ballot box and just cross my X next to it. So
And personally for me, I have you nominated for finance minister, so
thank you. I've counted two votes already. I'm happy.
There's a few buildings in the government I want to see gotten rid of and just new structures. Yeah, so is there anything next for you?
Certainly, yes. You know, sometimes when you embark on a certain path, you will know when you get to the end of the road. And I think I haven't yet. I think I still have quite a bit to offer.
Mm.
I am ready to offer myself to serve in various capacities. You might not know where you'll find me, but I'm available to serve. I have the interests of my country at heart, very patriotic Zambian. I'm sure you've heard me say this once or twice. I'm ready to serve my country. I have always loved Zambia. I know that this is home. I know that this is home for a lot of other people. It's home for my children and their children's children. So I want to live in a better Zambia, and I also want to leave
a better Zambia.
Yeah, so definitely you'll see me on one ballot paper or the next.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate having you and your patriotism. No, there's one of your videos that I watched when you was it on the interview with Linda, when you're speaking about when you just had some cold feet about contesting, but you just thought about an example that you'd want to be for your daughter.
Yes.
And just she should just have that example. And I have to admit, when you were talking about your daughter, you were also talking to me, because I really got inspired then. Because there are certain moments that I've ever considered just giving up on just trying to make this a better place, and that really just gave me a push to say I could also be an ex. So thank you very much for that.
You are welcome. I think this for me makes the journey very worthwhile. Sometimes the road doesn't take you where you want to go, you know. Like for me, when I contested for the position of last president, I didn't get it. But I think it has endeared me to a lot of people, and I've inspired people, and that for me has made it all worthwhile. I'm very happy, and I'm very grateful for the opportunity.
Interesting. It was then that I knew you. We didn't quite meet before that, but when I saw your posters and the likes, I said, let me actually find out about this woman. Yeah, so we looked you up, and Linda is quite a fan of you, so I'm
a fan of her.
So I quite learned from her as well what you've done. I also watched a video of Lulu Hangala. Right, so she made a video about you and said, oh, this is actually the woman for the job. When you, at the point when you heard the results that you didn't win, what came in your mind? Did you say, maybe I should stop?
You know, you're human. When you get into a competition, you want to win. otherwise no one enters a competition to lose. So of course I kept my hopes high, worked very hard. When the news came out, you do feel disappointed. But when I went back and reflected on the journey and the people who supported me, because I amassed a number of votes, that means those people, the message appealed to them. So I got over those sorts of the disappointment. The disappointment is a natural human emotion.
True.
Yeah, but we are back. Here we are.
Are we going again?
I think I answered that question.
No, specifically for Lars, are we going again?
Like I said, you might see me on a ballot paper near you very soon.
No, I'll have my pen next to it. Yeah, and I think just speaking to that, there is also something that I've always been bothered with. I think you might have also gone through it, is where we have, if someone is running against someone who's recontesting, we have this narrative where the people, not even the people in office, it's sometimes often not even them, but it's other people that will come up to you and just say, this is someone you already know, why are you running against them?
Yeah.
But that shift where I can't run against Mr. Mbewe and we can't be cordial about it and it feels like betrayal. So in terms of that narrative, what do you think is like the way forward in terms of shifting that narrative where we can have politics as a competition of ideas, not people or like seats?
It's true. For me, it's always been a competition of ideas, and that takes away it being personal per se. I know the nature of politics is after you've debated your ideas, you want to throw in something about the person. But really, it should be ideas. It's my idea against yours, and people choose which idea is the best. So it shouldn't also be about, oh no, this person can't run against the other person. It should be, what are they offering?
Person can't offer.
Yes. So rather sell your product than try and dismantle the other person's product. Just tell us about what are you selling? What are your ideas? What is your vision? Because if you focus on the other person, believe me, 9 times out of 10, it won't work out well. So focus on your idea and just think of it, like you said, as a competition of ideas. That's all it is.
I'm already excited for the next elections. I can't wait for that 3 weeks.
It's exactly 1959. Any last words for the youths? Just as
and the country. As we celebrate our love we have for Zambia.
Yes, that's true. For the youth, you are a powerful force. Never take your power for granted. Always make very, very good use of it. It's important to participate actively in the life of society. Do not boma yanganepo. You are boma. Power is vested in the people. So don't take your power for granted. And let's continue to love Zambia. Everything that we do, all our actions, everything that we say should be through the lens of how am I impacting my country and my country now and my country in the future. Because like I said earlier, 50, 60 years from now, none of us will be here. So the people who will be there will be thinking, what were these people thinking? And we don't want to leave that sort of legacy. So let's challenge ourselves to do our part, however small, to develop our corner of Zambia. And if we all do that, all the corners of Zambia will be developed and patriotism will be enhanced. And thank you so much for the opportunity to have this chat with you. It's been awesome. I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
The privilege is all ours. Enjoyed having a presence like yours.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. This has been Unseen Minority. It's exactly 8 p.m. and you have been listening to Zambia's biggest radio, 91.7 FM, Unza Radio.
91.7 FM.
May I have your attention, please?
Setting the pace. And winning the race. 91.7. Real Radio. Unza Radio. Unza Radio.
Excellent.
Singana mama siku ya kudala. See my man a dance, my baby, see my man Tina Lili. Nika langa masiku ya kudala. See my man a dance, my baby, see my man Tina Lili. Ukambana chinja. Ubudina chinja jabe maningi zimwa mende. Tina Lili. Ukambana chinja. Ubudina chinja jabe maningi zimwa mende. Tina Lili.
Why settle for crumbs when you can feast on world-class entertainment this season on Showmax? And the best part? You can pay for your subscription in just 5 simple steps with MTN Momo. Step 1. Download the Showmax app and sign up. Step 2. Select the package that speaks to you. Step 3. Choose MTN Momo as your payment method. Step 4. Enter your phone number and hit pay with MTN Momo. Step 5. Put in your MTN Momo PIN, confirm the payment, and boom, you're in. Now, sit back and dive into a buffet of all-round entertainment wherever and whenever you want. Showmax, streaming for Zambia. Why settle for crumbs when you can feast on world-class entertainment this season on Showmax? And the best part? You can pay for your subscription in just 5 simple steps with MTN Momo. Step 1. Download the Showmax app and sign up. Step 2. Select the package that speaks to you. Step 3. Choose MTN Momo as your payment method. Step 4. Enter your phone number and hit pay with MTN Momo. Step 5. Put in your MTN Momo PIN, confirm the payment, and boom, you're in. Now, sit back and dive into a buffet of all-round entertainment wherever and whenever you want. Showmax, streaming for Zambia.
With Showmax, it's an all-you-can-eat buffet of entertainment for less than a night out. Get unlimited access to binge-worthy series, movies, kids shows, and every Premier League match. Stream or download on your phone or laptop. Binge anytime, anywhere. And with packages starting from just 70 kwacha, entertainment has never been this affordable. Sign up now at showmax.com. Stream everything you love and stay ahead of the game. T's and C's apply.
Out receives the